Welcome to the Luma Roundtable, a podcast where we usually pick just one album, focus on it for a month, and then come together to discuss it. This episode is another special one, though. We're joined by a bunch of our old college radio coworkers and even our old general manager to discuss one of the most prolific, varied, and misunderstood bands of our time, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. They are known for their exploration of genre across their frequently released albums. Sonically, there is a through line to their sound of folk, psychedelic, and garage rock. With such variants in their releases, we thought they'd make a great candidate for another special episode. So without further ado, today we have with us Nikki, Brady, Jason, John Harlow, and Henry Zimmerman to discuss many of the different albums that have been released. Each one of us has picked one or two albums to discuss, and we're going to go through them chronologically. And I think to start us off, Harlow, you're going to go through a bit of a background on the band. You want to take it away?
Did we get a roll call, or did I miss it?
We can all say hi, yeah, if everyone wants to just like say a little hello.
Yeah, who's all in here?
My name's Brady. I'm in here.
Long hair.
Thanks, man.
You have to say your quirk too.
Yeah, your name and your quirk.
My quirk is that I got two haircuts in the last 3 years.
Love it.
I'm Jason. My quirk is I'm trying to get this episode sponsored by Bang.
I'm Nikki. My quirk is I'm really annoying about hiking lately, so I'm going to try to not talk about that at all.
Henry, what's your quirk?
I have a sore throat today. What a quirk.
Oh, okay.
He always has a sore throat.
Because you're always sick.
Chronically sick.
I got a quick question, and I'll open it up to everybody, because I don't. If you got a sore throat, I don't want you talking if you don't have to. But is anyone else's grocery store out of that throat coat tea? I haven't seen that shit in like 3 or 4 months.
Dude, the secret got out.
Is that a local problem, or... is that kind of going on everywhere right now?
I haven't gone looking for it in a long time. Somehow, on accident, over the last couple of years, we amassed a hoarder's supply of it because people kept giving it to us.
It's my dad. My dad gives us so much throat coat.
I was going to say, I've got a stash, too. I haven't checked in a while. We're the problem, I guess. We got stashes, like vaults.
Yeah, just
vaults of
it.
Throat coat.
Hoarding the supply.
Or in that stage, it was toilet paper, and then it was like eggs or whatever. Now it's throat coat. Good thing to have, man. It's winter.
Pull up the inflation index on throat coat.
Okay, but as much as I just want to shoot this shit, we're supposed to talk about King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. A wonderful Australian band with a goofy name. I mean, I can just launch into it, right? These guys started, from my understanding, sometime on or about 2010. I'm not gonna like Wikipedia out here, but a bunch of Australian dudes kind of playing about the greater Melbourne area. A few, you know, high school, college type of bands get together. I think it'd be funny to put together a joke band name and play some good old garage rock, and that's how we got King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Maybe we start with how we first came into contact with them, because Harlow, you were definitely my exposure through Rattlesnake.
Was I everybody here's exposure to this band?
You probably were.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, you were. Because
you're the reason we're here.
Rattlesnake was the first song I heard too. So.
I guess for context then, and we'll get to this record, I found out about this band. I came along somewhere around, like, I think it was when Quarters came out, and then Paper Mache Dream Balloon and all that from on. But from there, right, I mean, they didn't have like 15 albums back in like, you know, 2014, 15, whatever, right? It wasn't like there was a ton of stuff to go by. So everybody went right into the back catalog right away. So I'm a bit more familiar with these early records. It's The first two things, there's nothing really crazy going on here. They got an EP called Willoughby's Beach, and then they got a full length called 12 Bar Bruise. This is just straight garage rock. If you've heard like Ty Segall, if you've heard like the OCs, right? It's that very like surf rocky, garagey, you know, ton of delay on it type of thing.
Did you listen to those albums when they came out in like 2011 and 12? When they had like, two monthly listeners.
But I've been listening to like the OCs and Ty Segall and like all that kind of thing. You know, I kind of like the whole, you know, like San Francisco Bay Area, you know, 1960s garagey type thing, you know, like Jefferson Airplane and Big Brother and all that kind of sound. And so when I heard kind of the whole psych surf rock thing that now I think is, you know, tried and true and understood, and hey man, this band's kind of a standout in that genre, right? It was just another thing in that sound, and I was like, oh cool, sick. You know, I don't think they necessarily do it better than John Dwyer or Ty Segall or anyone else, and they've kind of carved out their own lane. But these first two records are that, right? It's surf rock, right? A little bit of a psychedelic thing going on, but it's surf rock. Nothing really to write home about. If that's not your thing, I mean, it's nothing that nobody else hasn't already done better. There's a few standout tracks. Sea of Trees is a pretty good one. I got this fucking song on there just about how much they love playing football. Footy, footy, just over and over and over.
American football? Or
No. European. I guess I should start with, have you heard these ever?
I haven't delved back this far, man.
What's your earliest point of listening for this band?
Probably like Oddments.
Oddments? Okay.
Yeah. And even in Oddments, like I would just, you know, pick here and there. Like I've never, like Murder of the Universe for me was like the first like front to backer that I just could listen to.
Nicky and Brady, my understanding is that you guys are gizzard heads now. And yeah, how far back do you go in this catalog here?
I think I'm in your mind fuzz, honestly. I haven't really listened to too much from Oddments, but I have listened to a couple of songs from them, from that album. Nothing I could like remember off the top of my head though.
Yeah, for me, it's also Mind Fuzz, Oddments.
Okay, good shit.
I remember when it dropped, we listened to Teenage Gizzard, which was like, man, this sounds like surf rock recorded in a hole 50 feet away from the microphones.
Yeah. So you know what I'm saying. Have you heard like a lot of, that type of stuff, that's the sound, right? It's super, mm-hmm. It's super drippy, right? Bridge pickup, lots of gain, put a shitload of spring reverb on it. I mean, that's the sound.
Big reverb.
It's very simple. It's very straightforward. The reason part of the way they sound like that is there's a whole thing in those old like surf rock recordings where you didn't have access to like multi-track recorders yet. And so you just kind of mic the room. So instead of like having a mic stuffed right up in a guitar cab, you'd put it like a foot away and you're kind of just getting everything. And so everything sounds very roomy. That's part of the whole surf sound. So you've heard Teenage Gizzard. That's kind of what these are. Willoughby's Bees, 12 Bar Bruise are just that, right? It's that exact thing. I think they still mix some of these in live from time to time. I think Sea of Trees still sometimes shows up. Nikki, you're nodding.
Yeah, they played, Brady, do you remember what song it was they played? I think it's from Willoughby's Beach. They played at Red Rocks.
I genuinely have no idea.
You pointed it out to me. I thought you might remember. But yeah, they played some of their like old stuff at Red Rocks.
How long ago was that?
October. Last year. Yeah.
Yeah, bought tickets to that a couple of years prior, but then it was getting repeatedly postponed on account of global events.
The original show is like May 2020.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I've got a rough outline of events in my noggin here. We'll get to that. We'll talk plenty about that show.
Yeah.
I guess just to sort of get us in, right? I mean, I feel like I'm just sort of stump in here on these first few. So I'll just try to get through these so we can get to the stuff that you all have heard and we can really get into. First two are that. Then you get Eyes Like the Sky, which is a spaghetti Western audiobook. Ambrose's dad, I guess, is really into Westerns, and they just got him on like voice memos on his laptop and let him like record some Western story he wrote. And then they put all these, you know, very like spaghetti Western instrumentals behind it. I'm pretty sure I read at some point that they got asked like, hey, what's the deal with that whole thing? And they're like, oh yeah, we played that game Red Dead Redemption and that game was sick. So we thought it'd be funny and cool to do this. And they were right. I mean, it's a great little record. This was the one back in the, you know, maybe early, you know, 2017 five album push type days that people were like, oh, like it wasn't on Spotify or anything, so it's kind of hard to hear. Like you had to pull it up on like SoundCloud or Bandcamp or to go hear it. And the physical release of it was this like a hard to come by thing. I think this was like their first foray into pressing records as flightless or whatever. And so copies of Eyes Like the Sky were like $500. It was crazy. I guess we should probably introduce the band, eh? Seven dudes originally, now they're six dudes. You have Stuart McKenzie. You've got, what's his name? Joey Walker. You've got Ambrose Kenny Smith. You've got Michael Cavanaugh. You've got Eric Morin, and you've got Lucas Skinner and Cookie, whose name I don't remember. And I'm not pulling this up on Wikipedia or any of that.
It's off the dome.
Off the dome.
Seven dudes. Good lineup. Three guitar band with two drummers. Fucking fantastic lineup. They got somebody playing keys. Oh my god, I forgot the other guitarist. Fuck, that's not even everybody.
Why is Stu McKenzie the main vocalist?
Yeah, Stu McKenzie is the main vocalist.
You got Stu, Joey, and Cookie. There's someone else?
Oh no, I got Joey Walker. Oh, there is somebody else though. Now you're reminding me. So I don't. This is a miscellaneous thought. So King Gizzard's got another member of the band who's not like in the actual performing part of the band. They're a visual artist, this guy named Jason Galea. He tours with the band. He does all of their visual design. So like all of their album art, all of their music videos, their stage projection behind them when they play live is like fed through like some video synthesis stuff. He's doing that live during the shows, and he's for, you know, all purposes, just a non-performing member of the band. He does everything except write and play on the song.
He's like that guy in Slipknot, didn't play an instrument, but just had like a baseball bat on stage and it just like hit kegs.
Is that a guy? Does Slipknot have a baseball bat guy?
I saw Slipknot growing up and they definitely had a baseball guy.
That's a good gig.
That's sick.
I want that gig. I want to do that. It's so fun.
And this will be my other thing I'm going to come back to. So apologies in advance. The way I think about this band and the sort of lineup, there's a lot of parallels between these dudes and the Grateful Dead, right? You got a seven member band, you know, expanded power trio with an organ and two drummers. That's what the Dead has, you know, doing this sort of, you know, improvisational kind of jam-based music. It's quite similar. The similar sort of building out your own independent organization and, you know, that sort of DIY ethos expanding into this thing where you're able to tour and play different sets night after night. And, you know, there's some parallels. And so that might come up a few times during this. What the fuck were we talking about? Introducing the band.
So we made it. We got the first three albums acknowledged.
Yeah. Eyes Like the Sky.
We've got after Eyes Like the Sky, there's Float Along, Fill Your Lungs, and then Odd Men.
Ambrose's dad is on that.
This is a classic.
Now's as good a time as any. Have you seen Ambrose's skate video? So pre-King Gizzard, Ambrose was like a Australian like professional skater. He has like some skate videos. You can like, they're still out on YouTube. He's good. He's real fucking good, actually.
Dude, Ambrose does everything. Like, this or nothing, Ambrose doesn't.
He's also the baseball bat guy.
Hold up.
I feel like it'd be hard to actually just like hit shit for like a 2 hour set list.
No. I can do it. I can absolutely do it. Oh my gosh, that'd be so fun.
Very tasteful.
Float along, fill your lungs is next. This is kind of the, at least I think it's next. I should probably keep these notes up. I've got the skate video in front of me still. Yeah, float along, fill your lungs is next. This is where they finally kind of get their, I think, their legs under them. And they start leaning a little bit further away from the surf side of the thing they're doing and a little bit more towards the psych side. There's sitar on this album. It's one of the first ones where they, I think they really lock into like the motoric beat thing that they do on a whole lot of these records. That boom, boom, cha, boom, 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 cha, boom, 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 cha, boom, 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 cha, boom, 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 cha. You know, the whole, you know, like kraut rock, Noi, can type thing where like they just have this constant like forward momentum on the drums. This is where I think they first find that. This is a good fucking record, man. Head on Pill. Tell me you've heard Head on Pill. Oh, nope. Fuck.
I don't know. Head on Pill. Fuck.
Jesus Christ. The first track on this record is a ripper. Head on Pill is like the, it's big. It's the long, it's the first long song that they, that King Gizzard ever put out. You know, they've got kind of like a lane of songs where they'll just have one that's really fucking long and it's got like several different parts in it and they jam really hard. Like Am I in Heaven is one of those. Like Crumbling Castles is one of those, you know what I'm saying? Like they'll just have like a really long saga, line, several parts in it. The River is one of those.
The contemporary, most modern one is gonna be Dripping Tap.
Yeah, it's one of those, like it's a type of song that they've got, you know what I'm saying?
The Epic.
Yeah, the big one, the Stairway, right? You gotta have a Stairway. You're a rock band. You got to have a Stairway. You got to have just one big epic one with a few different parts in it. Head on Pill is the first one of those. And that thing fucking rips. It's got some real, real energy to it. It's got this lick in the beginning that just, it's good. Highly recommend. The rest of the record's decent too. Head on Pill is the big standout. They used to close shows with it. God Is Calling Me Back Home is a good one. Let Me Mend the Past is a good one. It's a good record. What do they do after that? Oddments. So this is where a couple of you guys got on, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I've dove back a little bit.
We got Work This Time.
Yeah? That's it. That's what you think about Oddments?
That's, you know, that's the most memorable one to me.
Oh man, Oddments is a, just like they got types of songs, King Gizzard's also a band that has types of records. Oddments is the first miscellaneous, you know, bucket of songs. Every once in a while, these dudes write a bunch of songs. They're always writing songs and they sort of accumulate a few that don't really fit. And then just every once in a while, they put out like a odds and ends type of record. This is the first one of those. Gumboot Soup would be another, you know. This is the Odds and Ends record. And there's a few neat ones in there. Hot Wax is on this one. Hot Wax is a very good groove. It's a very straightforward song. But it's like, it's just, it's got this groove to it, man.
Hot Wax is some surf flavor.
It does. But it's, I don't know. It's hard to put. It's good. Hot Wax at high volume is a real experience. Crying is on this one. Pipe Dream right after it. Those two songs together are very good sound. Homeless Man and Adidas is on this one, which is just like a very straightforward, like acoustic track. I think there's a flute in it too. But I wish this band had more like straightforward songs in their catalog that are recorded, like Homeless Man and Adidas. it's so stripped down. This band's good at sticking a lot of stuff in the mix and just a very good, straightforward, stripped down acoustic track. But Oddments, and finally we can get ahead. Can't just be me sharing thoughts on this one, which is the first, this is the big record, right? I Am In Your Mind Fuzz.
Yeah.
The inflection point leading us to the giz of today.
It's a big one.
This is
Nick, the first Nikki one. Chose this one as her first to talk about. Nikki, do you want to get into it?
I really love this record. I think that the A side and B side are like the first four tracks, and then everything else on the album. I really focused on like the first four tracks for a long time. So for this, I tried to look into the back tracks a little bit more. I think like if we're talking giz eras, like Brady said, this is kind of a turning point for giz where we start seeing like more of their psych come out. And maybe I'm wrong about that, Harlow, because I haven't really looked at
this is right. I mean, this is the first record where they, I think, have very distinct identity.
Yeah.
Right. And it's the first time where I think they explicitly start playing songs into one another. Those first four songs, it's really just one song, right?
Yeah.
I'm In Your Mind. Right.
Yeah. I feel like they should have just put that into all one song, like they've done with Dripping Tap and the other like 16 minute long songs. But I do like the way that they've split it up. I think that each song is really its own thing, even though they really transition into each other. They are kind of their own idea. I had some notes on it. I'm trying to make sure I've got it. Yeah, I said it feels like an album where they're all just seeing like what they can riff off of each other in like a long jam session. And it takes that concept of like, I haven't watched Andor, but people have said about Andor that it's simple characters in a complex story. So giz on this album has really simple lyrics where they're just repeating something like cellophane a bunch of times, but layer all of their instrumentation above it. So like anytime you're listening to something, anytime you're listening to something different, like you pick up on something new. Like if you listen to the bass for too long, you might miss what harmonies are doing with their vocals. Or if you listen to the guitar line for too long, you might miss something new that they're doing. Like, I don't know, Ambrose is always like wilding out in the background with something. But
what do you think about the conjecture that this band is at their best when the songs are just very stupid and straightforward, but it's about maintaining the groove?
I think
instead of writing it, right? Because this is one of those, right? There's not, it's I'm In Your Mind. Everybody's lazy when they're tired. I'm In Your Mind. Right? This is a thing with this band. You know, you've got Hot Wax crawling under the floor, Hot Wax coming under the door, Rattlesnake, Footy Footy, right? I mean, this is a band you can pull, Trapdoor. You know, you got a lot of songs you can pull on this one where it's the same shit over and over and over, but it's not about that, right? It's another thing going on and all these rhythms playing against each other.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I've liked most about seeing them live in particular. You can really see like how much that they play off of each other. And there's not one person that's really just trying to stick out from the band. They're really like of one mind, I think, when they're playing together. And they're at their best when they're not trying to like come up with a cohesive like structure for a song, when they can just kind of have fun with it. So I think like, I was going to talk about this later, actually.
I agree 100%. And yeah. I was going to talk about this later. I picked the live album for a reason. Let's table this.
Sure.
For now. What do you think about the second half of the record?
The second half, I think, is where their transitions kind of fall off to me. They use a lot of fade outs, and that's kind of one of my complaints about the album, is I don't feel like they flow each song as seamlessly on the second half. I think they they do that a lot better in later albums. Like my other album that I'm focusing on is Omnium Gatherum. And in that album, even when songs are completely different, they follow some transitional line in between the two of them. I think, yeah, the transition from Empty to Hot Water is pretty weak compared to others on the album, especially considering like Stu is playing flute in both of these. There is a line to follow between the two of them, but I'm like, oh, they didn't really pick up on that for those two tracks. But I think in a lot of cases on this album, I don't know this for sure, but I get the impression that these guys were just jamming for a really long time on some of these songs, and then they just picked out the part that seemed the best for an album later on. And that's kind of where their fade outs come from. Yeah. I don't know if they had like specific ideas. I think they were just having fun.
There's some good ones on that B side. I mean, right. I mean, that A side, I mean, that's seminal. That's seminal King Gizzard.
Yeah.
Those Mind Fuzz songs into each other. They play, I mean, if you see them twice and they don't play that, you know, you got unlucky. Right. That's,
yeah,
that's a mainstay. That's seminal. I think it's actually their first like musical leitmotif. One of those things that comes up again in later songs in the catalog, both the backbeat, the, you know,
yeah, the bass line comes up a few different times. They love to use patterns and like flip them up a little bit or just insert them somewhere else. And it's something for you to grab onto. I think when you have all these layers, you're like, oh, I recognize that bass line, even though I don't know what they're saying on this track.
I think the melody comes back.
Yeah.
To the, I don't have anything. It's, you know what I'm talking about, the that comes back a lot.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, you know, that especially I think in the live context that they are able to sort of throw things out there as sort of anchors, right? If they're in some sort of deep territory where they've improvised away from the recorded version of the song, and then they throw one of these out there, right, for people who are, you know, not comfortable, I guess, with jam music. It's like, yeah, I know that.
They put Easter eggs in there for you to latch on to. It's like, oh, I don't know what you're doing for the last minute, but I know that one.
Yeah. I think it's very pragmatic of them. It's very pragmatic of them, right? And I think it creates through lines to their back catalog, right? Yeah. If you're like, oh, yeah, if we reuse this bit, right, then it's an easy transition.
I think that's one of the reasons they're able to crank out so much music. They're just like,
they're efficient.
They have a lot in their toolbox.
those second half songs, Hot Water is a great one.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, man. Hot Water is a great one. Slow Jam 1 is a great
one. Yeah, the flute interlude on Hot Water, I didn't know before looking into this more. That's used in Nonagon Infinity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's used a whole lot, actually. That's one of the big ones.
Yeah, and I think like the last three songs are also really cohesive in their own. They're just like sexy, dripping with blues kind of songs all together. It sounds like it'd be played at a festival on like a hot, humid day. And it's got those like sludgy elements and Satan Speeds Up that they've had in later albums too. So this is like, I feel like this album is kind of a blueprint for later albums for them. This is like where they started their toolbox.
I think you hit it right on the head.
And with lyrics, like I wrote down a couple of my favorite ones that I picked up because I haven't ever looked at the lyrics for Giz song before this, but Am I in Heaven? Let's all put her through the test. Come on, suck our mother's breast.
Yeah. Look, man, this ain't a lyrics band.
It's not.
Maybe, it's really not. Maybe later. I think some of the later lyrics have something to them, but you know, not at this point.
Well, a lot of them are about the end of the world, and like those themes are present here too. Like, Am I in Heaven is talking about just putting nature to her limit and eventually destroying Mother Nature.
And that's a common theme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree that there's definitely like some type of, there's some through lines, right, and lyrical themes across the band's catalog. And it seems like you guys have picked up on that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think,
what do you think? There's definitely like the sort of like natural destruction thing. I mean, what else do you think is sort of in play here as a through theme?
It's a through theme. I don't know. That is the main one. They are like a lot of early metal bands where they love to talk about different ways that the world could end. There's a lot of like throwaway stuff. Well, not throwaway, but just like goofy ideas they had. And I'll talk about that later in Omnium. But I know people will talk about like the Gizverse and try to come up with things that tie every album together. They're like, this is part of the Giz universe. And I don't know if it's that thought through or not, but it's fun to think about.
They like characters every now and again. I mean, Murder in the Universe. Yeah, through and through. Like, that one's very direct. I think Fishing for Fishies touches on it. Rat's Nest. A little bit adjacent to the idea in Murder of the Universe. I mean, Nonagon Infinity has people vultures.
Oh, I didn't know this before looking into this, but a lot of Cookie's songs are about his dog. Cookie writes about Homer a lot. Little French bulldog.
That's sick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a summary. I have like two pages written, so that's like a summary of what I've got. I will say the first time I heard this album was from you, Harlow. I think you were trying to get me to check out the band by like showing me how crazy their concerts get. And it was that one where the lady is walking up on stage in a jellyfish costume.
They're playing outside in Austin. Yeah, they play the whole, that's a great video. It's a good recording too. The video's really good. The recording's really good. That's a greatest of all time. Right? And this is where this band, I think, really sort of got its feet really under it, right? And they've got a thing going now, right? Yeah. Float Along, Fill Your Lungs. It's like, okay, right? You're not just aping somebody else. You got something going on here, right? This is a viable musical project. But Mind Fuzz, now you've got something going, right? We see the sort of, I think, like you said, the sort of origin point of a lot of the through lines for this band, whether that's the you know, cutting between tracks, whether it's the sort of, you know, these very like musical ideas that come back over and over. I think it's one of the sort of first times that like an explicit lyrical theme comes forward that will continue. It's the start of the Gizverse, which, you know, I joked about we're going to do this for 6 hours, but we can't get on all that. I'm not caught up on the lore.
No.
And it's no. there's not enough hours in the day. I can't get into Gizverse on this one.
No, to be honest, like, it's just not something that I've followed outside of the albums where it's like really clear, like Murder of the Universe. Like, you pick up on the same characters every now and then, but I don't know. It's kind of like when they bring patterns back from old music, they just bring old characters back. They're like, let's expand on this a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where my
The realm all engage with it, right, is as leitmotifs. It's the fact that, like, you know, they're pulling back to something previous, and people are like, oh yeah, that's this verse. But I mean, I guess explicitly within the musical context, like, there's an idea. It's a word to describe that concept where you have these sort of, you know, rearrangements of previously established melodies and themes. But yeah, Mind Fuzz. I think this is the one. I don't know this to be certainly true, but I think this is where they connected with Leah Senior.
Oh, is it?
Well,
really?
Yeah. Have you heard her cover of Slow Jam?
No.
Oh man, hang on. It's on YouTube.
Oh, also, for anyone listening and who they're like, who is Leah Senior? She is the original Balrog on Murder of the Universe. That's probably where you would know her best.
Yeah, she's the narrator voice on that record.
For Murder of the Universe.
Narration. Yeah, she does a little bit on what's the Polyrhythms album? The one Polygon Dwanaland.
Yeah.
She's on that one a little bit, and she's on King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard has a record label of their own provenance called Flightless Records. It's got like an emu or an ostrich or whatever.
Do you know how they're affiliated? Like how they met?
Leah Senior's on Flightless. She's toured with the band. She's on the label.
That's sick.
And there's a cover on her YouTube of her and a buddy of hers doing Slow Jam 1 off Mind Fuzz, and it's really good. I like it a whole lot. And I don't know if the timeline lines up, but I wouldn't see it as impossible as, right? I mean, King Giz wasn't what they were at this point. You know, another great local Australian band. You're doing a nice cover of their song you're putting on YouTube. Seems like a great way. If they didn't already know each other, you know, I don't know this past, but this is the first crossover between the two bands that I could find.
I do think that's all my thoughts on Mind Fuzz. If we want to go on to, I think Polygon Wonderland is next. Is that right, Karina?
I think quarters.
There's some important ground to cover.
We got
a quarter of the way through this discography.
Quarters and then Paper Mache Dream Balloon.
Quarters is a quick one.
Okay.
Quarters is a quick one.
Go for it.
Okay. Again, for Three Lines with this band, these guys love fucking gimmicks, man. They love gimmicks. They're not all gimmick records, but they got a few gimmick records. And this is the first one of those. Quarters is four songs. They're all exactly 10 minutes and 10 seconds long. There's not too much to write home about on this one. I mean, the real big takeaway here is this is the one that the river is on. That's a great track, right? That's a mainstay. If you see this band live when they play this song, you had a good show. Nikki, you're on mute. This isn't like a Teams call. You don't have to mute yourself.
I'm worried about Gandalf yelling in the background at some point.
I don't care. Let me hear your cat.
I've got the cat right here. He's asleep. Don't worry about it.
No, I was going to say we're two for two, I think, on the river.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the river and Mind Fuzz.
The river. Both shows. The river's a jam, right? I mean, this is the real... They love playing with the arrangement of this one. They really like going off left field. It's a great fucking track. So the river, that's the good one. The rest of these three songs, the second one has a shepherd's tone in it, sort of mess with your head and do something. A shepherd's tone is an audio illusion where you take three sine waves and you have them all rise in pitch, and then when the top one gets to a specified point, you fade the volume out and then bring it back down, and it creates an illusion of like an infinite rising tone. If you've ever played Mario 64 and you get to the infinite staircase that you need 70 stars, and it just goes bum 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 bum, like it always goes up, right? But it never gets anywhere despite having constantly rising. It has one of those underneath the track, and cool, right? If you've never heard of Shepherd's Stone, that's really cool, but it's also really fucking annoying to hear underneath the song.
Yeah, that sounds annoying.
B-side of Quarters is the one on the God is in the Rhythm on the back has some very tasteful lead guitar work. Very tasteful. It's worth a listen. That's all I gotta say about Quarters. I don't have a lot of thoughts on this one.
That's fine. Henry, are you well enough to go through Paper Mache and Dream Balloon?
Yeah, I'll throw out some thoughts. And I think we're on track to record a 10-hour podcast if we get through all these albums. So I'll just kind of keep it top line notes here.
Keep it under 3 hours.
You know, we've heard some of this 60s psychedelic stuff. Harlow even mentioned some of that Summer of Love sound out of San Francisco. Paper Mache Dream Balloon is that like 60s psychedelic acoustic sort of chill vibe pop. And I think it's a really easy listen. I think if anyone out there in listener land is like, oh, where do I even start? I would definitely recommend Paper Mache Dream Balloon. It's the first Giz album I went front to back on after I got into them through like Rattlesnake and the River and Crumbling Castle and some of this stuff. And I'll just point out something I found funny on the Wikipedia page under like that little column on the right that's got all the details listed under studio. It has various homes, sheds, garages, apartments, hotels, and tunnels, which just feels very fitting for them. You know, they're like, let's just track something. Like, we're in this tunnel. Like, let's get some good sounds. We're in this shed. Let's get some good sounds. And also in terms of song structure, I mean, these are all kind of like 60s pop song lengths. So it's like 2 minute songs, 3 minute songs. Yeah, just some good classic Giz that I think on the long arc of Giz history gets overlooked a little bit. I think it's a really enjoyable record, kind of a softer listen. We kind of wind our way away from this psychedelic 60s pop sound pretty quickly after this record, but for this record, it's a good one.
It's very accessible Giz on this album.
Totally agree.
If the psychedelic wall of sound that they often get into isn't always your speed, like to your point, it's a lot softer. It's almost, it's like their brand of easy listening.
Totally. I would definitely agree with that assessment.
Does everybody kind of have a song that they would go to totally. To recommend Giz to somebody that hasn't heard of them before, or an album even?
I honestly recommend Crumbling Castle or Rattlesnake. Any one of those songs Harlow was talking about, those like epics. Because I feel like that's really like quintessential Giz. And if you're in on that, you'll be down for the rest, maybe.
I think for me.
Does Rattlesnake? Oh, God.
Oh, sorry. Go.
I was gonna say, did they say anything else besides Rattlesnake in the song Rattlesnake? I can't remember.
I think that's how we all got into it.
Yeah. I got like lyrics.
Don't get me in on the.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Isolation. There's separation. Okay. There's you're right. You're right.
I think I'd give, unfortunately, a little bit more complicated answer to that question. I think if you were going to recommend King Gizzard to somebody, I think this is a band with a lot of endpoints, and that I would sort of temper that recommendation based on where somebody's approaching it from. Right. If you're somebody who's coming from like heavier music, I might point you towards Infest the Rat's Nest, or, you know, some of the like heavier, more jammy, you know, guitar songs on the more recent couple of records. If you're somebody who's, you know, coming from maybe like a jazz or an R&B background, I'd point you towards Quarters. I'd point you towards Paper Mache. I'd point you towards Sketches of Brunswick East. If you're someone who likes the, you know, psych garage rock thing, you go to the first couple of records. If, you know, you like Kraut Rock, you'll go for all the Motorik Beat songs. You know, it's, I think there's multiple inlets to this band. Shit, I mean, you can even get, like, there's like some very contemporary stuff on like Butterfly 3000 and all that, but I don't want to get ahead of myself on all the future records. There's, Brady, you mentioned that you thought this one was like an easily listening record, and I think this is probably the first one of those. I think they have a couple more of those in the catalog, and this is the first one.
Yeah, I obviously don't know the pre-2014 catalog very well, but at least for what I know, this is certainly the first. I think Sketches is similar in tone. Later on, Fishing for Fishies is probably the closest thing we have to a sequel to Paper Mache and the ideas on it in terms of sound. Another folky acoustic.
I guess open to all you guys. Is there any particular song on this record that you're most drawn to?
I'm a trapdoor guy.
Same.
Yeah. Let's go! I love that fucking song. I love fucking trapdoor. Holy shit, Trapdoor really goes, man. Have you seen, you've seen him do that one live? He busts out the flute, he does the whole Ian Anderson Jethro Tull thing.
I don't think we've seen that one
live. They didn't do that live when we saw them.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Might have been one of the other shows.
It's so stupid. I think this band's best when they're being stupid.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, the points when you don't know what it means or if it's supposed to mean anything at all, but there's like trapdoor.
Doesn't matter.
Trapdoor. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I guess maybe closing thought on Paper Mache. I think Trapdoor is really good. I like the sound of this record as a whole. I don't know if there's a lot of individual excellent songs on here. I think there's some that are better than others. Like, I think Club Cadaver is decent. I think Bitter Boogie and GRI are good. But like some of these, I wish they had more sort of standout straightforward acoustic songs, like Homeless Man and Adidas. I'm holding out one day for some more Acoustic Gizzard. I think they said at one point when they're like old and decrepit that they might tour and just play everything acoustically, but no time soon.
To throw another song title out there in the mix, I think Bone is a song that's got like mass appeal. A song that I heard and didn't know was King Giz, but like I heard out in the wild as like, oh, this is a popular song. And I feel like taken in isolation, Bone has like some serious staying power that no one ever talks about.
Bone. Bone.
Final thought on Paper Mache. In the liner notes on the album, there's a guy named Eric Moore who is credited with, quote, nothing.
No Eric on this one.
That's funny. Sweet. All right. Brady, are you ready to go through Nonagon Infinity with us?
Ready as I'll ever be. I mean, this one's a fucking rip-roaring ride, dude. I mean, as for anything that I'm here to talk about today, I'm going to have to rely on this to be a dialogue and not just me monologuing.
100%.
No, I mean, Nonagon Infinity, dude. This is the album that made me get Giz after years of hearing you guys meme on Rattlesnake. I'm like, Rattlesnake. Isolation, trepidation, rattle. I listened to Nonagon Infinity and I'm like, holy shit, these guys have got something actually. The sequel to I'm In Your Mind Fuzz, to my mind, I mean, just look at the album covers.
100%. Yeah.
I mean, shit, Robot Stop opens with a crash, vocals just accompanied by guitar. I mean, classic Giz move, having vocals and guitar doing the same thing at the same time. Probably at least Resident.
He does do that a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah, they do it all the time. maybe the resident Giz historian here will think I'm wrong, but I think this is the most intense album opening they had pre-Infest the Rat's Nest. I mean, they give you 8 entire seconds to buckle the fuck up before the wall of sound is blowing you out of your seat.
They do that too. They start intros with something real quiet, and that's always the song that's like in your face like 10 seconds later. It's like,
yeah, I mean,
this is relaxing. I'm having a nice time today. And then it's just a wall of sound.
And this conversation, this sort of recurring theme of our conversation about them is like, it seems like at least a couple of us are particularly a fan of when Giz is being dumb, like when it has no clear meaning. It's like you're just there for it. It's just a ride. And so this album just comes out of the ether. It's like Nonagon Infinity opens the door. Nonagon Infinity opens the door. It's like, okay,
it's got no sides, man. It opens the door.
He's coming in. Yeah, there's no way to stop it.
Gets the people going. So I mean, as they like to open their albums with sort of power medleys or epics. I mean, Robot Stop, Big Fig Wasp, Gamma Knife are like a power trio of an album open. More than I ever gave it credit for at first. Like, there is a lot of jammy flavor in this. I mean, it's 15 straight minutes of them just like sort of having a riff and then people take turns just playing around with it. And then they drop a bunch of the instrumentation and then they come back and build it up and they just do that about 30 times in a row. And so it's another one that's like completely driven by that, like just that constant forward momentum driving from the backbeat.
The motoric beat.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't let up. And so I'm a goldfish. There's probably nothing more important for me in music than Dynamics, and to have it in less than like 7 minutes. So this album gets my attention right out of the gate. What really sold me on it when I was like, okay, I'm sticking with this, I'm into these guys, is when Gamma Knife transitions into People Vultures. Because after like literally 15 straight minutes of then just it's all gone. One guitar comes out of the silence. They start playing with the tempo. Then they're like, oh yeah, we're still here. The rest of the band is still here. We're not quiet yet. You get a kaleidoscope. The synth comes in. And then they let you catch your breath again. And then the guitar metal riff comes back, but this time it's got the gain. And then Giz is being dumb. They're like, okay, remember how we yelled a lot of things? Now you're going to be able to tell what we're saying again. People, vultures, got approaches. I don't know the other lyrics. You're back on the roller coaster. So overall, I guess this is indicative of my feelings of this whole album, in that it is a blistering ride through some hard psychedelic rock, and they're just kind of dragging you along. If you want to keep up, that's great. Just enjoy it. It's a roller coaster. I think the A side is stronger than the B side. Not to say the back half slouches. They do, as a band, really like to just pick a melody or a riff and spend an entire song just playing with one little idea. And the B side, I think, spends a lot more time focusing on playing with like the absolute foundation of what they're doing. Like, they vary the tempo, they vary the volume more. I think in particular, one of the strong points of their whole catalog is transitioning into wah-wah. Do we have any opinions on that in the room?
No, I mean, I think the second half of this, I think Robot Stop into like the beginning of People Vultures, like you said, is like one big, you know, kind of and then the contrast between the songs sort of starts to come out in the second half. And I think Invisible Face into Wawa is one of those, right, where they really Invisible Face has some really cool polyrhythmic stuff kind of coming out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. I think create some contrast against how, you know, straightforward the motoric is on the first half. And then they sort of seamlessly come out of that into a different rhythm right at the start of the next track. It's definitely some well-rehearsed transition work. I think this record was played live, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I think this is, they just recorded
straight to tapes.
I could be wrong. I think it's like a captured performance, if I'm not mistaken.
This album feels like Murder of the Universe. Like, if they added that same narration, it would be like, it feel exactly like Murder of the Universe, at least the first half.
A lot of shared DNA for sure.
Yeah. I'm just getting the same vibe.
Probably my favorite thing about this album is that the title isn't for show. I mean, each song or point on the Nonagon, if you will, like cleanly transitions into the next song, including Road Train back into Robot Stop, for a nicely infinitely looping album, as they put it.
That's the gimmick.
It's a good gimmick.
That's the gimmick on this one. I've always been like, I don't know, I've been of the mind that as long as your last song fades back into your first, you've got a looping album, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's that hard of a thing to pull, but yeah, this one's good. So Nonagon is where this band like really got big. I waited for this record to come out, and I think it leaked actually, like a couple days before it came out, or they put it up for streaming somewhere or something. And
they
when this record came out,
copies of their own albums.
This is where this band got big. in these days, there was, back when people still use Facebook, there was a Facebook group for people who like this band, and it had like maybe a couple thousand people in it, and it was small, right? And like Ambrose's mom was in it, and she used to like reply to posts and shit. Like some weirdo would show up and just be like, hey, what kind of drugs do you think the band does? And she'd be in the comments. She's like, no, they're good boys. You know, they reefer and psychedelics. They don't mess with any of the hard shit. Like,
what a good mom.
She seemed like a very nice lady.
Ambrose seems to have a sweet family. I'll get into it later.
And then this band came up and it like boom, like it exploded, like just a ton of people came in. There was significantly more buzz about this band when Nonagon Infinity came on.
And dinner February. Nails.